Blog Talk Radio.
And the thief cometh not but for to steal, and to kill, and to destroy. But I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. St. John 10, verse 10. Are there any questions?
Watch it, baby. This cat is heavy on religion.
I can see this has become a struggle between good and evil. Satan has a question.
Yes, sir, Chaplain Gill, but since neither one of us are God, I don't think either one of us are in any position to say who is good and who's evil.
Why don't you just ask your question?
We were discussing the disciples. What color were they?
Well, I don't think we know that for certain.
But they were Hebrews, were they not?
That's right.
As was Jesus. Jesus was also a Hebrew.
Why don't you just ask your question?
What color were the original Hebrews?
I have told you that we don't know that for certain.
Then you can't believe for certain that Jesus was white.
Just a moment. God is white. Isn't it obvious?
Well, that is obvious, but we don't know if it's obvious that God is white. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that Jesus did not have blonde hair and blue eyes. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that the images of Jesus that are on prison walls and churches throughout the world are not historically correct, because history teaches us that Jesus was born in a region where the people had color.
There's proof in the very Bible that you ask us to read in Revelation's
first chapter, verse 14 and 15, that Jesus had hair like wool and feet the color of brass.
Just what are you saying?
I'm not saying anything. I'm proving to you that Jesus was not, and I might quote one of our Indian brothers, he was not a pale face. Amen.
Isn't that interesting?
Beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in the cosmos, where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a logger.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
You know, folks, you have to admit, the Afro Nerd Radio Show has probably the most coldest intros on record. Imagine hearing that kind of intro on terrestrial, or dare I say extraterrestrial radio. Folks, welcome again. This is the Midweek in Review show, the Midweek in Review edition of AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk. 90-minute facts, fun, fiery, you name it, we have it. Urban Alternative, we have everything for you, for your edification. Listen, we have a lot to get into, folks. Let me give you the phone number. Feel free to join on in with our discourse, with our colloquium. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. For the uninitiated, that was perhaps America's greatest actor currently, Mr. Denzel Washington, Mount Vernon's own Denzel Washington. And that was from, of course, Malcolm X. Spike Lee's X. Okay, folks, without further ado, let's go to a quick groove, Urban Alternative groove, and then we'll get into it. This is Danelia Cotton, Make You Move, Make You Move. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Cause I'm a little black devil, rock your world, so come move with me.
You're not ready. You folks aren't ready. But we'll still play the music anyway. Again, folks, that was the great Danelia Cotton, Make You Move. This is the Midweek and Review edition of Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afternoon Radio. And, of course, speaking of the captain, listen, your film has made, I think, its money back. Its money's back, $200 million, Captain. Come on up and get your prize. Let's get to it, Captain Kirk.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
As I said before, on the previous show, I didn't like the movie. I didn't like the movie. I repeat, I did not like the movie. And I also said it would make its money because they are J.J. Abrams fans and there's millions of Trekkies worldwide. But let the record stand that I did not like the movie. Let's go.
Duly noted. Okay, folks, once again, let me repeat the call-in number. Feel free to give us a buzz. The water is warm. Don't be scurred. 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Listen, a lot to get into, so I'll just get into it. The captain and I are always, and others, I should expand it to just beyond, in all honesty, in all full disclosure, it's not just the captain and myself, but primarily the captain and myself, where we get all these emails back and forth, or just information. I'm surprised we haven't suffered, or maybe we are suffering from information overload. We're always inundated, and the captain can attest to this, inundated with information constantly. So, right before we go on air, as is custom, I open up an email from the captain showing me something from the TED conferences. And I'm going to share this with you. I implore our listenership to check this out because I was saying this, you know, behind the scenes in a rather colorful way, but I'm going to say it exactly the same way to you. Sometimes I will not sugarcoat what I say. I said to the captain that this email that you sent me, I'm going to share it with our listeners because since this TED conference, this particular topic was spoken from thin white lips, you will probably take heed of it as opposed to the thick black lips that tell you this same information weekly. What the hell is Afternoon talking about? You know, and I'm not saying that to disparage our multiracial listenership, but I'm saying it in a colloquial fashion so folks understand that sometimes when a person of color spews forth truth, From various races, sometimes from your own, many times from your own. The singer Miguel is catching some fire right now for speaking truthfully. So sometimes when it comes from big black lips, it's not taken seriously, the information. And we give you plenty of information weekly, and sometimes it is questioned. So what am I talking about? This TED conference, it's an acronym, TED. TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. It's a global conference where they basically discuss, interpolate, extrapolate, elucidate on varied ideas. It's an idea conference. People submit philosophies. They submit experiences. They share data. It's a very communal environment. And they have these streams. You can see the conference is streaming. It's an annual conference, and they're streaming. I think the Huffington Post has a link, but they have their own website. Just simply go to TED.com, or Google TED conference. So this particular email that the captain forwarded to my attention dealt with a gentleman that was speaking rather candidly as a philosopher, candidly talking about memes, M-E-M-E-S, memes. The captain and I, especially the captain, we talk about memes, he talks about memes all the time. And this show is geared towards, to be completely honest, for Afro-Nerd to be viral, for this to become a meme. Our meme, though, our meme is for you to discern memes. That's the meme. That's the meme. I mean, who's on first, who's on second? That's essentially what we're talking about. Discern memes. So there are several people that actually have these conferences talking about how there's a viral mindset, whether it's based on religion, whether it's based on politics, social engineering. It's all about folks not having their minds, doing things that may be unconscionable for the sake of a meme. Actually, they actually have even upgraded the term meme to team, T-E-M-E, T as in Tom, because of the technological meme. So now you have a Franken word. Technology plus meme is a team, which is definitely what you're experiencing nowadays, Captain, where you're looking at these YouTube clips. You're looking at what was the most famous meme in the last couple of weeks? The Harlem Shake. You just fall in line. You just fall in line. I mean, listen, it's a cute little meme, but it is a viral mind sweep. It's a viral mind sweep. So what we say constantly on the show, consistently, about what happens in urban radio and how there's a hegemony of thought. That's my phraseology, a hegemony of thought, a kind of groupthink, and that's perhaps some of what my problem with Mr. Harvey. Not to go into that so much. I know I've gotten long emails shouting out Q Storm as to why I'm not really a supporter of Mr. Steve Harvey. I think he's created a type of meme where you're not allowed to have critical analysis. That's my problem with it. He's a holy roller. So go to TED.com, T-E-D. Check out Susan Blackmore. She has a meme. I'm sorry. She has a conference about memes and teens. And then the gentleman who was that was initially forwarded to my attention by the captain. Let's see, what's his name? Bear with me.
Dan Dennett.
Yeah, Dan Dennett, philosopher. Now he also talks about dangerous memes. I mean, he goes into Islam, he goes into everything. So that's something that has to be noted. But Captain, listen, we talk about this all the time. I don't know if people think we're talking out of our buttocks, but now you have these conferences with heads of states, with philosophers, with scientists that are telling you the same thing we've been telling you.
Well,
discernment.
It's good to see.
Use discernment.
Yes, it's good. It's good to see. They co-signed essentially what we've been saying for the last year. So it's good. It's definitely good to see. So you know what the audience has to understand is this. Memes, to make it even more simple, because sometimes people can get lost in the verbiage. Not to say all of you, but some of you may get lost in the verbiage. Not to say all of you, just some. The Afro-Nerd listener is highly intelligent and very well learned, so we know this. So that being said, memes are nothing more than ideas that are just operate just like a virus. You know when you get sick, what a virus does, it takes over, and you have competing memes that operate on a virus-type level mode. So, we also know within the menstrual community, there's a bunch of dangerous memes, virus, that just runs around and takes over the mindset. And as an outsider, the non-menstrual, you look at them and you say, what's going on? How come they can't get it? Dangerous means have taken over. And sometimes you, if you hang around too long, you might catch a few of these memes. Then you have to offload it. Just like, you know, when you get a cold, you have to take time to detox yourself. You take vitamin C, you know, you get a lot of fluids. You have to get rid of these negative memes. Same way it works. It's the same way with dangerous memes. And we see it in the black community at the menstrual level. We see what's happening, what we call the menstrual awareness. So that's just to make it really simple so you can understand it from the day-to-day perspective, that we're just not making up things here as we go along on this show. It has a real scientific basis, things that you can touch and that you can see on the everyday basis that you can utilize for yourself. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, quickly, because I'm going to go to a clip. You know, we discussed this also. I've called in Sean Renee's show on Sirius.
Yes.
Her show is, of course, Coco Mode. So perhaps our own viral infection might be working. But at least our virus is based on common sense. That's the hardest virus to infiltrate, you know, or to spread, I should say. That's the hardest, you know, isn't that the truth, Captain? The hardest virus to infect is common sense. Foolishness is the easiest virus. I'm thinking of the recent Pacers v. Heat game. Pacers came out victorious. Thank God. I'm not with the Heat on this one, Captain. I want the Pacers to pull. Maybe because I'm a Reggie Miller fan from back in the day. So
okay.
I always respected the Pacers, their style of play. And this is coming from someone who's not really a sports guy. But, I respect the game. I fully respect it. I'm looking at the players, and I'm thinking of the meme that I see. Everybody has tattoos, Captain. Everybody. And I'm sitting and saying, who has an original idea on this on these teams? Where everybody, at least I can respect, and he's a minstrel, Rodman, because at the time that he was doing it, he was really being an individual. At the time he was doing it, and when he was messing around with Madonna, he was really an outlaw. Now everybody is Rodman. There's not an individual thought or a thought that can move a piece of lint in with any of these gentlemen. Actually, I'm just throwing it out there. I just find it odd that in today's landscape, everybody has innocuous tattoos. I mean, how can you paint your body and just put anything on it? Whatever. Enough of me pontificating, but wow. This is something I just looked at. Go Pacers, though. All right. A number of times on the show, I've spoken about my penchant for calling in on the Coco Mode show, which airs 10 a.m. on Sirius XM. Formerly The Power, now it's called The Urban View. The young lady that hosts the show, her name is Shauna Renee, and she's the daughter of radio veteran Joe Madison. So I've called in a couple of times, and even she admitted that we really don't jive too well. And that's okay. That's okay. But I called in once a game. Sometimes I will, sometimes I will not. I was going to call Rob Redding, who was formerly of SiriusXM. Now he's out on his own. He was ousted from Sirius for whatever, for God knows what. He was talking about something that we will talk about in a moment. Well, actually, everything's wrapped up. And I was going to call it, but I was like, you know, I don't really want to fight the meme all the time. when you call an urban radio with a thought process that is so not the typical black way of thinking, it seems to cause chaos. It just does. I think some of our listenership, or many of the folks who are riding with us for all these years now, they're getting it. So it's not like I'm talking a different language. But sometimes it is a bit trying, and the captain knows this, to call up these places, and you know it's a battle. And eventually, and this clip I'm going to play proves me out, eventually these folks start to come around. As I said, trying to create a virus composed of common sense is not an easy endeavor. Foolishness, that goes right on in. So I called in about President Obama speaking at Morehouse University recently. I'll let the audience hear this, but let's just listen to what she says. But I find it interesting that there's a bit of a turnaround from the last time that we spoke, where I thought I really wasn't respected. So let's listen to AfroNerd on Coco Mode. Hold on.
I'll talk about political correctness in just a second with the AfroNerd. Hold on for a second. We're going to talk about this, but you know, it's cliche. It becomes cliche. We need to take responsibility for ourselves. We need to do this. We need to do that. But nobody stops and says, okay, well, can somebody please give me the tools in order to do this? What is it that I'm supposed to do? I know I'm supposed to take responsibility for my family, but I'm not really sure where to begin. And, I mean, that's, again, it's hard work, which is why, you know, we go to church. And I love the church, folks. We go to church, and the pastor says, oh, just pray to God, because God is going to fix it. You don't have to do nothing but pray. That's real easy. God, please help me. But what do I say? God helps those who, okay. What's up, Afro Nerd?
Good morning, Shauna.
How are you?
Pretty good. Listen, couple of things. One, we have to give kudos to Mr. Smith, because if you really look at what he does image-wise, he has a film coming out in, I guess, 2 weeks. It's a futuristic film with a father and son, black father, black son in the future. That within itself, we scoff at it, don't really analyze it, but that's revolutionary to see that goes against the minstrelsy that we see all the time. We're not seeing a minstrel here. So that alone needs to be applauded, just that is a good look. Secondly, one of your colleagues, Robin Quivers, legendary radio veteran Quivers, had made a comment in reporting about the Morehouse commencement speech by President Obama. Her first reaction was, well, these are Morehouse graduates, Morehouse men. Why do they need to be spoken to that way? As much as I admire Ms. Quivers, she's not on the ground. Because on Morehouse, and I was accepted at Morehouse. I went to Hampton. But Morehouse, we have men wearing dresses on Morehouse's campus. If you think about Tuskegee University, they recently showed the women of Tuskegee, it's on video, of them chanting in glee, repeating and reciting the lyrics of the Rick Ross song, the rape song. Now, these are supposed to be college-educated women, and they're on camera with great glee reciting rape lyrics. These are college people. So I think it is necessary that we have to be honest that, sure, we do need to have that kind of message from Obama, from President, and from Bill Cosby, because we are racing to the bottom unquestionably. And no one wants to talk about the need for a conservative shift. I'm sorry, a cultural shift. We need a cultural shift because we are racing to the bottom, Shauna.
Was that a conservative shift? Was that like a Freudian slip?
Freudian slip. No, I'm not going to go. Some folks don't want to hear that, because that's not all about that. And I'm not a conservative ideologue, but I do believe some of what they say has some validity. Heck, a broken clock tells correct time twice a day.
Okay, well, let me just stop you. And for, you know, you've called plenty of times, and we're usually not on the same page. I agree with 90% of what you're saying. And I think we all, you, myself included, have to be careful to understand, or be careful to not generalize, you know, or to be clear when we are. Because while you do have men wearing dresses at Morehouse, you have plenty who are not. Therefore, we cannot allow those men to represent that entire university. And I forgot, where did you say, was it Tuskegee you said, where the girls were singing the Rick Ross? I mean, we cannot allow those girls, who I'm assuming are in the minority, represent all of the women who go to that school. It is very important that that be the case. And I think that's why people are saying, you know, and that perhaps Obama's speech was misguided, or, you know, it could have been said somewhere else. But, you know, I agree with you. I think that it needs to be heard. And I think even, you know, despite the fact that these are college graduates, great, they graduated. So what's the next step? Can we talk to a college graduate about responsibility? I mean, does getting a college degree exempt you from learning anything else? I mean, there's a point there. So I appreciate your call. I'm going to get on to.
All right. Also, correction, folks. I'm sorry. I said Morehouse University. It's Morehouse College. I should know that. Not a university, a college. Morehouse College. Captain, what are your thoughts? I got some other things. Now that I'm listening to it again. What are your thoughts?
Well said. I think it was well said. She was ready to come at you behind a conservative situation, but it was a slip, because that's not what you were talking about at the given time. I think you did a great job, and she had no choice but to come around to what you were saying, because she knows that this is the truth. They needed that message, and actually they probably needed an even stronger message than that. That's why, more or less, to tell you the truth. So,
yeah,
that's how I feel about it.
Well, you know, the deal, though, in listening to it, you know, first of all, it goes by what I was saying earlier, also, Catherine, about sometimes I do have this reticence about calling urban radio shows, because even though I said conservative as a Freudian slip, you knew she's ready to jump. You know, let's say I didn't mean that, but if I had said conservative, then what's wrong with that also? Because we have it in our minds that conservatism literally equals racism. Not that there aren't racists in the conservative movement or in the Republican Party, just as there are racists in all facets of life. But if you're going to stick with the meme, black folks are not going to want to listen to something that's labeled conservatism. Now, maybe if you call it something else, although it might be the same message, we might be able to ingest it. But just the fact that because I slipped and said conservative, I knew as soon as I slipped, I knew I better not use the term conservative on her show, because it'll go in a different direction, and it gives her more fodder to shut me down. You know, that's why I quickly rebounded and said, hey, conservatives might be right twice a day, just like a broken clock. A broken clock still provides correct time at least twice a day. You see, that can't be deconstructed. See, my whole problem is, when I call up these shows, you may not like what I say, but you have to be able to take from Mr. Carroll, who's soon to be coming on Block Talk, and I can't wait. Much of what we say cannot be disassembled, atomized, or deconstructed. It really cannot. The facts are there. We see through empirical data, we see what we see. So now she says, well, in this instance, 90% I agree with you. We don't normally agree. All right, you would agree if you would be more honest about the facts. Because 2 + 2 will always be 4. We can disagree about other things that can be tweaked. We can calibrate on certain issues, Captain. Everybody can calibrate on certain issues. But you cannot get away from the facts. So when we critique black folk, just like Obama has done now, you cannot deconstruct the failure rate, the economy, the intraracial violence. You can choose to ignore it, but you can't dispute that these things do not exist. So the reason why we're going to have to revisit this slightly again today. Well, you know what? I'm going to go to a musical break first, Captain. When we get back, actually, I want to talk about this article. It's really a two-for-one thing, Captain. The singer Miguel, he was recently performed on the Billboard Awards about a week ago. Fairly popular new artist. he's been getting some critique, and he basically said something about black folk are not are perhaps the most critical people. Am I saying that right? Judgmental. That we are the most judgmental people, and everybody is jumping down his throat now for saying that black people are. And he's saying, you know, we are judgmental. He may be correct to that partially, but they're jumping on him on that. And it also falls in line with folks that are critiquing the Obamas, which is from an article that I sent you recently, Captain, that's going into, are the Obamas too willing to criticize fellow African Americans? Now, this is from the Griot from a few days ago. So they're still on this thing. You know, the commencement address was on the 18th, and people are still talking about whether Obama was within his rights. I should say not just the president, but Mrs. Obama as well, that at their respective speeches, most of what they were saying had a lot to do with critiquing black folk, and for some reason we can't do that. We can't do that. So I want to talk about that, and how it's really Miguel has weighed in. He's catching it. So I think we should extrapolate on that. So let me go to a quick musical break, and then we will we'll get into it. All right, this is You know what? Now all of a sudden my okay. All right, here we go. This is 17 Go by Santa Gold. Santa Gold. We'll be right back. 17 Go. We'll be right back.
Hey, hey, hey.
Okay, we're back once again, giving you the best of urban alternative black rock, Afro punk. That was 17 Go, the remix, Santa Gold. All right, folks, again, this is the Midweek Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro Nerd Radio. Feel free to give us a buzz at 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. All right, before the break, I was talking about the now infamous, commencement address that President Obama gave at the legendary HBCU Morehouse College. And we spoke about this for the last couple of shows now. But now we're just seeing more articles critiquing the Obamas. And I guess what's really going on is that some folk believe that black folks should not be getting a different message than everybody else. Now, the only problem with that is there are many black folks that have critiqued the president for not being black enough. In other words, you know, he should be the black president. He should be the black president. When you listen to, or if you listen to Rob Redding, who I've mentioned a few times, who I've called in on his show a few times, he's very much about criticizing the president for not embracing the concept of being a black president. He says that I am the president. I cannot be the black president. He cannot be the president for just black folk. So, and that's just the way it is. And actually, you would want it to be that way. How would it be, Captain, for President Barack Obama to attain this office after all the other presidents, the black one is discernibly different in how he does things than everybody else, although he's elected by everybody else. It just would not work. And no matter what he does, because the last show we had, no matter what he does, it's to be critiqued. Michael Savage, shock jock Michael Savage, conservative radio host, we played a clip of him last week where he was, it just felt like this was too black a speech, so to speak. Too black a speech. He didn't like it. And then you have some black folks, they didn't like it either. So I don't know what he can do. Now, I want to mention a couple of things from the article specifically. Again, folks, go to thegrio.com. The article is entitled, Are the Obamas Too Willing to Criticize Fellow African Americans? And I'm dovetailing this with what's happening with Miguel the Singer, recently appeared on the Billboard Awards. I guess we could play some Miguel music. I don't have any music at this point, but I would classify him. He's doing traditional R&B, which we really have not heard in a long time. We have not heard in a long time. So he's catching hell on Twitter. And because of a statement that he said about black folks being the most judgmental, now he's catching hell. Now this, Captain, once again, this will ruffle the feathers of black folk to be vocal about, that he critiqued black folk for being too critical or being too judgmental. He'll do that, but we didn't really hear a peep from black folk about Lil Wayne defecating on the image of Emmett Till. And we didn't hear too much about Rick Ross defecating on women because of his rape lyrics. But because Miguel makes an innocuous comment in Twitter, that's causing chaos. I find it maddening. Let me play this quick clip of the Miguel controversy. I see we have a phone call as well, so we'll pick up the lines after the clip. We'll expand it, but let's go to this clip by Stereotude, a news outfit called Stereotude, Miguel versus Twitter, the Miguel controversy. Hold on.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rebecca Prince for Stereo 2. Just 1 week after Miguel drop-kicked the fan in the face during his Billboard Music Awards performance, the singer is stirring up some controversy with tweets about his race and the stereotypes that surround it. I'm proud of my heritage, but honestly, black people are the most judgmental people in the world, the adorned singer wrote. We've been conditioned, pre-programmed to hate ourselves, he continued to say. Miguel, whose father is Mexican and whose mother is African-American, did not give specific examples to back up his point, but did add, "That's why I appreciate those who choose to think and act for themselves, regardless of ethnicity or culture." Miguel continued to say, "The problem cannot be fixed until the problem is recognized. Not everyone is the same, thank goodness, and obviously I love all of my fans. Of course, everyone is judgmental. I just personally believe we are the most critical of our own." Though Miguel's comments divided his Twitter followers, he did receive messages of support from DJ Ruckus and singer Emma Naira. What do you guys think of Miguel's controversial remarks? Tweet us at Stereotude or comment on our Instagram.
What's up, Captain? You had something to add?
Well, this is what I think. I don't necessarily agree with the most judgmental part, but the other part, about us being conditioned to hate ourselves and not like ourselves. Of course. Of course. That's totally accurate. It's totally accurate. You know, that's totally accurate. That's definitely what it is. To the point where we're doing it to ourselves at this given point. You don't really need so much outside influence anymore. It's a self-generating meme within ourselves now at this given point. So the last part of the statement, I definitely do agree. The first part, you know, but second part, definitely. That's all I wanted to add.
Well, I'm going to open up the lines, but I'm going to say something after we converse with the caller. I agree with Miguel, but he's got to put a caveat to the judgmental thing. I'll just say quickly, and then I'll go into it. The caveat, because he's trying to do a little bit of backpedaling now, and that's just the way the business is. We are judgmental, right? But we're judgmental about surface things. We're not judgmental about the things that are more crucial. When it comes down to things, because I had to think about this, for the superficial stuff, the superficial goings-ons, you can go to Media Takeout, Box, all those ghetto-centric blogs. We will take down and judge black folk on superficiality, okay? But when it comes down to the things that we really need to be critical about and do critical analysis, we will not do it. We are not judgmental to a fault for serious things. I'll go into it. I'll have proof positive after the caller. Proof positive. Hold on. Thank Mary and Barry. Hold on. All right, caller. Welcome to Afternoon. Tell us you are 703. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, Deeper and everybody? This is George from D.C. How's everything?
Hey George, what's up, man? Nice to hear from you.
Hey, leave my mayor alone, Mary and Barry. Leave him alone. But anyway.
okay.
Yeah, quick thing. I think part of the problem is we're looking at the effect of black America basically not having a news source. So, in effect, Twitter and entertainment nonsense becomes our news for the day. And I think one of the biggest problems we have with Twitter is these entertainers, a lot of them don't need to be on there. Yeah, they're closer to the fans, and it's a way to get whatever they want out there. But the old adage, bad news is the best news, works in all this new media world we have. But, I mean, it's sort of scary that we as a people, black Americans, there's no, Hispanics have Telemundo, Univision, whatever. We don't have anything. So, in effect, our daily news cycle is Twitter nonsense and whatever spins out of that. And 9 times out of 10 is entertainment. And let me get back to the Morehouse thing. I had some, like I said earlier, a lot of my family went there, and they went to the commencement speech. And I think what people are missing is it's a commencement speech. It was aimed toward the graduates in Morehouse. And I know the president has a wider audience, but I spoke to them. They said nobody there, the vast majority, took it for what it was, a commencement speech to say, hey, this is the world you're going into. We got problems. Go forth. Nothing more, nothing less. I just think there's entities out there that will make more than what it needs to be made out of. It was just a typical commencement speech, just happened to be in front of an all-black audience, or practically all-black audience.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, listen, we've been speaking about this for a little bit now because it seems to be bubbling up still, that folks are starting to really get into this whole thing. I remember when Dr. Cosby came out. Now it's almost 10 years now from his commencement address. And actually, his NAACP speech because of the 50th anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Topeka case. When he came out on this thing, he had a moment where he, as they say on the street, blacked out. He had a moment of absolute clarity. He couldn't take it anymore, and he was compelled to be truthful. And right away, Dr. Michael Eric Dyson came out with a book. I never saw someone write a book so quickly, talking about is Bill Cosby right, or is the black middle class, have they lost their mind? Something about that. Something that's akin to the article. He was so quick to critique what Dr. Cosby has said, and I said, listen, even if you do not agree with Dr. Cosby, even if you don't, there are different factions within the black community that should be heard. I felt like a weight was taken off when he said what he said, because there have been many black folk highlighting my father, the tangential producer of the show, The Oracle. He's the owner of a barbershop, of a hair salon, and that kind of talk is very prevalent in black businesses, where you're allowed to be honest. It's not really a secret per se, but he was out publicly. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, do you think it's generational? I'm not going to guess your age, but I'll just say I'm on the other side of 40. And, you know, I just think that a lot of the talk now in regards to how we comport ourselves, if that's, you know, hopefully that's a word, in public.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, it is.
All the time. Comport and deport. But go ahead.
And we're from the generation was, you know, basically don't go out there and embarrass us, the family or whoever. And that's thrown out the window. And I think a lot of it is generational. I don't want to, you know, not all young people are bad. I'm not going to paint that broad a brush. But there's nothing's off limits anymore. And that's the part that scares me. I don't know if we can pull back from that. I mean, it doesn't care if it comes. If Lil Wayne cleaned himself up tomorrow and became the person you want him to be, someone's going to throw him under the bus. It's all like the same at the end of The Wire when I forgot to make Marlo, when he kind of cleaned himself up and, you know, went as a businessman and went back out. There was another young dude out there to challenge him. There's always going to be someone out there, you know, who's going to challenge you or challenge us. And I just think there's not enough voices out there to be heard. I mean, these are just voices in the wind. It's not collective.
Well, you know what? I'm hesitant to say that it's generational. I know what you're getting at. Clearly I know what you're getting at. But my only problem is that we the captain and myself, we talk to folk of so many different age groups. I mean, some of our best friends are in their 20s, and they get it. They get it clearly. There's no battle between ourselves and the 20-somethings, but the deal is that we have a commonality as to how we were raised. These 20-somethings come from dual parentage, parentage where they are still together. Or they had fathers that were present in their lives. You seem to get it when less about your age and more about how you were raised and your information base. And I just think that it seems to be more about how the black folks are getting down. If you
let me
really,
ask you
really
something.
Be about it,
I'm gonna ask you something.
Well, once I let you do it, like, one second. I'm gonna finish this one point. Right. What we're really getting into is, the statistics are not lying. New York has a 25% black male high school graduation rate. That's unconscionable. 25%. Asian folk, Ashkenazi Jews, other races are excelling, and we are repeating a meme of failure. There's no way to get around that. Forget about generational. Everybody else seems to be the 20-something Asian male and female as a stereotype now, as a stereotype, appear to be winning based on tradition and culture. Black folks, we used to have that. We used to be the quote-unquote Asians that say in 1950. In 1950, we were tracking in a certain way. And in someplace post-1970, we fell off, and we are continuing to fall.
Well, let me ask you this, and New York is probably the best place to, you know, where this occurs. I'm reading where more blacks from the Caribbean and from Africa matriculating to the Ivy League, who are graduating high school and going on to college. Now, New York 25%, when you say black, I mean, is that black Americans? Is it broken down by ethnicity? I mean, is it broken down by blacks from Jamaica, blacks from Nigeria, blacks from just, you know, I mean, there's a difference in blacks who immigrate here than blacks who've been here. I don't want to, you know, that's another story, you know, another show. You know, we don't have time but that's something we got to look into.
I can get you an answer, but I know that is the current state of affairs if you take the totality of it all. Now, listen, you know, we're talking about black males. I can get you an answer. I don't know how it divvies up based on ethnicity versus race among black folk. Because you are correct. Cambria Heights, I should even say, that's too local. Let's say Queens. Queens has the distinction. Queens, New York, bears the distinction that the black community, which is highly inclusive of Caribbeans, has, I think, are the most salaried, even over whites, in the state. Something to that effect. I can get more specific on that. But because of the success rate of Caribbeans and because of maybe multiple jobs, that stereotype, the whole thing, the salaries of in Queens, maybe just in that borough, but the Queens black residents actually make more than the whites in Queens based on salary. Not that necessarily the wealthiest, but they make the most. There is a crazy stat based on Caribbean success, Caribbean business ownership, that whole nine. And also, having grown up with Caribbean folk, the captain is of Caribbean extraction, there has been somewhat of a coolness among some between African Americans and Caribbeans, because I had friends that would tell me, well, you know, my parents really don't want us to associate with too many African Americans. This goes back many years.
I grew up
because
the same
of the perception, thing. Because of the perception that African Americans do not have it going on. Certain things. Now, probably I got a pass because my name is Desmond, and also because, you know, my parents are middle class working people. We were no different than anybody else. My parents, father's a business owner, couple of cars in the driveway, blah 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 blah. We were against the even intra-racially. Now we're talking intra-racially. We were against type, but ever so often, among my Caribbean friends, they will say something slick. That will say, "Well, you know, if something happens in the hood, there you go with you Americans." And I say, "Uh-uh, that's lower tier. That's projects. That's projects. That's Shaquan. That's not the middle class black African Americans that I know." So within our own, we do not want to get specific. We don't want to discern. But there are a number of articles out there, whether it's from Haitian folk, whether it's from Costa Ricans, you name it. Some, not all, but some will tell you they will not either identify themselves as African American, or there will be somewhat of a coolness based on this. Africans, Caribbeans, just as black, maybe blacker genetically than African American. And yet, And yet, there's a lot of what's the book? I was trying to get her on the show, Captain. Amy Chua. Amy Chua has a book called Battle Hymn of what is it called? Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mom, I think. Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother.
Yes.
Yeah, I read that.
Right, and it's, you know, some people have criticized her and that book, but I wanted to get her on the show, and she admitted that, you know, the Asians have that stereotype, but she also did a caveat and said there are West Indian folk, there are black folk, there are pockets of the Tiger Mom. Yeah, Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mom. There are pockets of the Tiger Mom in all ethnicities. But she widened it to a Western thing, where Westerners are not excelling, which is also a thing, too. Black folks have a cold. If black folks have a flu, the white folks have a sniffle. She brought it to a Western thing.
I think I'll just wrap it up. I know it's getting toward the top of the hour. Right. Do you think the lack of a black news program, whatever, I know that's it's nebulous, but we don't have anything that broadcasts out nationwide our concerns. Do you think the lack of having that is playing into some of this? It seems like the lunatics are running the asylum in regards to how you say the lower tier. It just gets pushed out there with no filter. And maybe if there's a news source out there, it can filter it somewhat.
Well, yes. There's a couple of things I have to note, because this is what we talk about incessantly. You have a conservative congressman, I think former congressman, J.C. Watts. He's trying to put together some kind of black news network, and I believe that Armstrong Williams is also working on something as well. So you do have folks that are behind the scenes trying to do something. But that is a major deal. BET at one point did have a rather reputable news segment or news operation over there, but they were not getting the revenue to support it. And as time went on, based on what they will tell you, based on polling, black folks, you know, they didn't really want it. You got the impression that black people did not really want the news. I mentioned a local news show or current affairs show that I've actually been on, the Open Line. The Open Line cut back their hours. They were a two-hour show, a weekend show, and their hours were cut back because they did polling. This is a local radio show. They did polling, and black folks would prefer to hear more music on a Sunday. So some of this is on us, where there's this belief that, you know, that if you do the polling, if you start interviewing people, blacks will tell you or give you the impression they don't want to know anything. They don't want it, allegedly. So I think our friend dropped off. That's okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think? That's a good question. I'm going to go to the next topic. But what are your thoughts? And I think it's a fair thing. That's what we're here for.
Well, you definitely need the outlet. You definitely need the quote-unquote black news, something that we talk about on this show at ad nauseum, you know, regular basis. It's something that definitely is needed. Just as the gentleman aptly stated, he says, you know, Latinos and every other ethnicity and every other hue, they have their own different type of news, you know, and we do not at this given point. So I think something like that definitely helps. Also having like different stations set up such as this, you need that also. But also too, you have to build the meme within the black community even before that. So there has to be change amongst the people. What's happening right now, and we talk about this on a regular basis, the minstrel mentality is creeping up to where it doesn't belong. The minstrel mentality is supposed to be kept at a very small minority level. It's not supposed to be mainstream. Let me repeat that. It's not supposed to be mainstream. It's supposed to be very small, quarantined, faction of black life. That's it. Not mainstream.
Not when you have Lil Wayne, that's supposed to be the norm. Everyone's running around with that type of mentality. Not to say that we all are, but it's going mainstream, has went pop. That's the problem. So we have to change the meme. And if you change the meme, you're more accepting to these different type of things that are happening. It's not everything is Lil Wayne, Nicki Minaj, you know, who's driving this car, look at the rims, look at her booty. Let's talk about something. Let's be a bit more sophisticated, people, because we're a lot more than what we are showing at this given point. That's all that from her. Back over to you.
Tupac, please. He's going to tell black people what to do. He recites some history. Please, all these gangsta rappers telling black people with college educations what to do. That doesn't strike you as odd?
Okay, so you're saying that lower class blacks have the upper and middle class in check.
You know it. You'd get called Uncle Tom in a second if you went against the kind of agenda they set. Right? I mean, I'm not saying be white, but this tough guy stuff is not exactly your Stanley Kaplan formula for success. Imagine if white people were dictated to by white trash. We'd all live in trailer parks in West Virginia and be the most populous state.
Captain, doesn't it say it all? Folks,
yes.
That is Harold Perrineau. You know him from Oz as the paraplegic inmate, and also from Lost, the gentleman with dreads. I don't think he has dreads now, but at the time he wore dreads, and that was a movie called A Day, 1999 or 2000. It's an independent film. A Day in Black and White. I think it's available on DVD. Definitely pick it up, and we play that as one of our major clips. Now, this is what's going on now.
Niggas love to not know.
That's the standard. That's the standard we're fighting up against.
Niggas love to not know.
That's it. One quick thing, and then we're going to move along. I might have mentioned this before, Captain, is that, you see, at one time when we were tracking a certain way to be tribal, when we were tracking, and I want the audience, I think one of our listeners even told you, maybe she emailed us, but someone you know personally, that she was rather thankful of us because we actually remind her of where we were culturally. We give her somewhat of a history lesson that we've told her, like, we have to remind people of how things were at one time. So I'm going to do that briefly. At one time when black folks were of a certain trajectory, when we were tracking in a certain way, the black middle class was front and center. I guess around Father's Day, we will have the Oracle on for another interview. Our audience seems to love my father, so when he speaks, you Afro-Nerd the Elder, he'll come on. That should be pretty insightful. And he can talk about this more succinctly. But there was a time, and you think about it, visually and even politically, you had Paul Robeson. Think about the giants that were representative of black people, let's say between 1930 and 1970. You had Paul Robeson. You had Sidney Poitier, who's still with us, thankfully. You have Harry Belafonte, Brock Peters, Ruby Dee, Ozzie Davis, Miles Davis. I mean, think about the level of, I can go on and on. Duke Ellington. You had some really, one of my heroes, I can't remember his name. The congressman from Harlem, Captain. I must need ginseng. Anyway, you had these individuals that were the face of black people. The face of black people. And now, who would rate into today to compare to those folks that I just mentioned? Who? I mean, seriously. There's no one. Adam Clayton Powell. It just came to me. Adam Clayton Powell Jr. And you throw Senior in there as well. Adam Clayton Powell, all these folks, They were clean, well-spoken. James, the great James Baldwin. Who is James Baldwin for 2013? There's nobody that rates. And, of course, I'm Dr. King, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X. Look at the mountains. These people are mountainous. That is whether they were on different sides of the political spectrum, look at the representation. Look at the representation. James Farmer, who was depicted in The Great Debaters, which is another clip that we play. These people were highly educated, well versed. Even the radicals of the 60s, if you throw in H. Rat Brown and all these other folks, you may have difficulty with them, but they were educated folks. These movements from the 60s, they were educated people, Captain. Now we see Nicki Minaj flailing her buttocks on stage. That's where, and we see Rihanna with a blunt in her mouth. You would never see Dorothy Dandridge with a blunt in her mouth. You just wouldn't. You wouldn't see Lola Falana with a blunt in her mouth. So these memes have slowly caused us to race to the bottom. And we're here to fight it. We're here at AfroNerd to pull back the curtain and to remind you that things were not always that way. You had a strong middle class aesthetic that was promoting and guiding the black community. You don't really see that anymore. Like you said, the gentleman said from D.C., now, you know, the patients are running, the patients, the asylum, you know, they're running the asylum now. So it is what it is. All right. Catherine, I want to move along. We got about 19 minutes remaining. You know what? Actually, real quick, did you hear about this Spanish teacher from the Bronx that is filing a lawsuit because she used the term Negro in class, or Negro, I should say, in class? This is a clear example of racing to the bottom, of absurdity. Just to give you more information, folks, she was fired. I don't think I have her name here. Her name, Patrona Smith. 65-year-old woman, Patrona Smith, Bronx public school teacher for many decades. A student allegedly took umbrage with her using the term Negro. Now, mind you, she's a Spanish teacher. And it gets even more bizarre because she's from the West Indies. So she's a black woman who's bilingual, who's teaching Spanish. They're going over issues of the spectrum in class. Green, brown, blue, black. And black in Spanish is negro. Some goofy seventh grader took offense to the term negro, and someone didn't intervene, some wackiness, political correctness to the extreme, because negro is black in Spanish. How did this woman lose the job? I mean, listen, there's got to be a major league lawsuit on this one, because this sounds goofy as all get out. Captain, the patients have escaped the asylum. This is the Bronx, New York.
It sounds totally ludicrous.
It sounds crazy.
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You know, how is the principal not going to know that? Principals are supposed to be educated people that took probably a foreign language themselves. You know, they might not have studied it to the level as the teacher has, but they should know this. This doesn't make any sense. It seems like they were quick to rush to judgment for damage control, and then they're going to get screwed, in my opinion, behind this. Because any moron, if this is the story, if this is truly what happened, you read the story, you say, no way, this could not have happened. But if this is what truly what happened, there's not any false reporting or anything like that, you're going to lose in this one. She was doing her job. That's it. Open and shut case, you're going to have to pay her. That's it. Old school district, pay out, let's go. Let's get it going. Real simple. You idiots, you morons. Back over to you, Scott.
Well, you know, Captain, I think I've said this to you behind the scenes. I don't know a time that I don't know when I didn't know that Negro was Spanish for black.
Exactly.
Like, who doesn't know that? And why would someone take the words of a seventh grader? I mean, listen, you can listen. Everyone is entitled. I'm not going to get into ageism. A seventh grader can come out and be completely clear about certain things. But in this matter, as far as language, Spanish language, this should have been nipped in the bud so early on. And how does this woman lose her job over a Spanish term that many folks who have a passing knowledge of Spanish would know? I mean, it's ridiculous. This reminds, and this has come up before, Captain. This reminds me of this big hullabaloo, maybe going back 10 years now. This hullabaloo, you know this, of this Washington official that lost his job briefly. He was reinstated at some point. But I could foretell this. I knew this was going to happen when I heard just the early parts of what went down. It was embarrassing. Gentlemen, again, a Washington official delivering some kind of speech involved in some kind of conference, and he used the term niggardly.
Yes.
N-I-G-G-A-R-D-L-Y, niggardly. Maybe because I'm a wordsmith. I just knew what niggardly means. It means to be a spendthrift or to be miserly.
Mm-hmm.
But because it sounds like the infamous N-word, because it sounds like another word, he had to lose his job. And no one was willing to embarrass black folk or the contingents of black people that were, you know, this group of black folks, this cabal that developed around getting this man fired. All someone had to say was, hey, you know, you might want to pick up a dictionary because he was within his rights to use a word that is a legitimate word. It's not the other word. It just simply sounds like – it just sounds like – why not get rid of the word bigger or figure? We don't, it's equally as absurd. It's equally as absurd. And I remember when it went down, I said – I think this is probably where, again, it was on It was definitely the catalyst that was put me on the road to Dr. Cosby's way of thinking, to the road to conservatism, the road to straight talk. Because no one mentioned that, whispered like, hey, you know, niggardly is not niggerly. It's a different word. It's a legit word. And then maybe 2 months later, there was a little bit of a fallback. But I felt. If you're going to be tribal, I felt ashamed that this went as far as it did. No one said anything. No one said, hey, you know what? You're wrong on this. You're wrong. All right, we have another call.
Uneducated individuals.
Yeah, no one was willing to say, hey, I'm sorry, but it's a real word. You know, I know, you know, get rid of bigger, get rid of figure, you know, go through the whole rhyme scheme. Since it's so close to the infamous N-word. All right, caller, welcome to After Earth featuring Captain Kirk, 661, what's up?
Hey, what's up, man? It's this Dennis Latham. I'm over there in the chat room.
Oh, yes. What's up?
Yeah, I do want to make a couple statements. One is that I noticed that you said that nobody stood up against Lil Wayne and his disrespect to Emmett Till. But, you know, I know a lot of people who stood up against that, and the same thing with Rick Ross. And I don't understand why John Legend and other people are teaming up with this guy, Rick Ross, And you know, I'm just going to say like this here. And something else was mentioned that black people don't have a media to go to address their concerns. You know, I think they have too many places to address their concerns, but they don't have any place to put proven solutions into effect. That's what's needed. Because we can talk all day and night about what's wrong, but putting proven solutions into action is what's needed in the black community. And with people like Steve Harvey, Michael Bazin, Cornel West, Tavis Smiley, and Jesse Jackson, they're not going to give you that platform because they don't want the problem solved. They just want a base so they can draw people in to get the numbers up so they can bring in money to their pockets. You feel me?
Yeah, well, listen, first of all, I agree with a lot of what you said. Only thing about the critique that I thought, first of all, I didn't think there was enough. Obviously, there were folks that came in on the Lil Wayne and the Rick Ross thing. But if we're going to be fair, I don't think blacks as legion came in on these two issues. The family of Emmett Till, were far more on top of this guy than the public. And as far as Rick Ross, you can look this up. You can look at the video footage. It was white women that were responsible for getting Rick Ross ousted from Reebok. They're the ones that took, and this you can look this up. They were the ones that really took the helm on getting this guy to pay, because they looked at the rape thing less about race and more about women. It was more of a gender issue for them. But when it came down to the visual manifestation of someone coming out against this fool, it wasn't black women, because when you see visuals on, I showed you the link. When you see visuals now, you saw the quote-unquote educated women from Tuskegee reciting his lyrics. White women,
you
want to
know why?
Hand, yeah, sure.
You want to know why? Because of the current black leaders, preachers, and teachers are sellouts. Just like the ones I named, they're sellouts. Plain and simple. They're not teaching togetherness. They're not teaching love for each other. They're not even teaching how to stand up against the enemy or evil or however you want to put it. I'm just saying. But because they are black, they are left in those positions, like Steve Harvey, you know, like Michael Bazin. All they do is keep up controversy. They don't bring out solutions. Just because they might show up twice a year at a function, oh, all of a sudden they do a little PR, public relations thing, all of a sudden they for black people. But the rest of the year, 362 days of the year, they out confusing the minds of black people.
Let me tell you, I agree with what you're saying wholeheartedly. And let me tell you, and I want you to continue listening to what we're doing. We're doing it on the internet. But think about how revolutionary this show is, really. With some of the guests that we've had, we were able to interview Marva Collins, one of our preeminent educators. How come no one interviews this woman? How about the fact that we play the alternative music? We're not just playing minstrel hip-hop, disrespectful music. You have black folks that do rock music. That's part of the problem. The meme that we just talked about, the meme is black folks listen to R&B, low-grade R&B, and disrespectful minstrel hip-hop. That's all you're getting. When you listen to radio, you listen to minstrel radio. They'll talk about hip-hop housewives, and they'll talk about the Real Housewives of Atlanta. When there's so much information out here to discuss technologically, socially, economically, politically, there's a lot more going on with black folks. The whole black nerd movement, all these things are going on right now, but we don't talk about it. No one's sharing this information. But when it comes down to shucking and jiving, Tyler Perrying, that is what constitutes black urban media right now. As far disseminating the information, you're not going to get it.
Right. And let me say one more thing, too. Then I'm done now. But, you know, I seen a big uproar when Dr. Dre donated $35 million to USC.
We talked about
they
that.
They complained. Huh?
We spoke about that last show.
Go ahead. Continue, sir.
Okay, well, the thing is, I don't have a problem with Dr. Dre giving $35 million to if it's an all-white college. I don't care. You know why? Because Dr. Dre's career was to disassociate black people from themselves, make them hate themselves, make them abuse themselves even more, showing that they hate him. You know, he hate black people, you know, because all of his, you know, all of his rap, gangster rap and stuff was teaching blacks to hate themselves, go out and kill each other, disrespect the women. And then just because he gets some money and donated to a white college, I mean, what's that say about somebody who's mad about it, who's black? I mean, you shouldn't want that kind of money.
Dennis, guess what? Listen to the last show because we said exactly what you said.
Yep.
And what's funny?
Yeah, that's cool.
And matter of fact, I even mentioned something else I want you to take home. I mentioned that on Media Takeout, which is another minstrel blog, they actually posed a question. In Georgia recently, there was some kind of Klansman gathering, some kind of Klansman march. The Media Takeout actually had this as a title. They were asking in the title about this Klansman meeting, where were the trap stars, which is a code for drug dealers? Where were the goons, the black goons, and the trap stars to combat the Klan? Now, why would anyone, this is what makes them a minstrel site, why would anyone expect criminals and ne'er-do-wells to fight battles of righteousness? It's the same thing of Dr. Dre, like you just said. Dr. Dre had an album called The Chronic, okay? Everything about his career, he's a part of N.W.A., Niggas with Attitude. That record set the tone for the minstrel movement, which has been going on for 25 years right now. So why his entire career has not been about black righteousness. So why would you expect, like a trap star, quote-unquote trap star, or a drug dealer, why would you expect these people to come out in your favor now? They're right. They are cohorts to the Klan. They're the black Klan. Now, this type of discourse, Dennis, you will not hear it put that way on urban radio. I don't know why. They talk the same old thing. We're trying desperately to do extraterrestrial or terrestrial radio. But this kind of talk, they will not allow it. You have to be a minstrel to get a check. Trust me on that. The minstrels get paid very well. There's always a job at the post office. There's always a job with the minstrel movement. Captain.
Well said. I don't need to add anything more onto that.
It is what it is. Dennis, pass the word around. Tell folks what we're doing. Not everyone has to agree with this, but someone has to say something. Someone has to say the obvious. I don't want black men to continue killing themselves. I don't want black men and women to fail out of school. But if I mention the statistics, if I mention the reality, we have so much hurt and so much pain that by mentioning the facts, it's better to avoid it. It's better to dance and tell jokes. Yuck. It's better to do that than to be real. To be real is not very profitable. To be a clown, you can be extremely wealthy. You, too, can donate $35 million to a college if you are a clown. Not so easy if you are righteous. It is what it is. Dennis, listen, as always, continue listening. We got to leave. Continue calling. Definitely insightful. One of our best calls.
Yeah, I appreciate you, man.
Right back at you, man. Thank you. All right, Captain. Listen, we got about 2 minutes remaining. We still didn't get. We were actually supposed to talk about how Western IQs have lessened by 14 points. Now that's not a black issue, really. It's just a scientific issue. But why can't? That's another thing to Dennis. Why can't we speak about some issues that aren't labeled black issues? That's another problem with urban radio. You can't talk about science and technology on a black station. Have you noticed that? Why can't you do that? Black folks, we don't use computers. We're not scientists. Neil deGrasse Tyson, one of our preeminent, America's preeminent scientist is a black man? How come he's not on black radio? We're going to get him on pretty soon. Why can't the number one face of science who happens to be black, how come that man is not on urban radio? Just to be interviewed, Captain. Why?
Oh, you said a mouthful. That says it all.
Isn't that a problem?
Yeah, absolutely it's a problem. It's a huge problem.
Now, on a show called Afro Nerd, he's more than welcome. He'd be coming home. But urban radio, where they talk about nonsense, why shake up that program? Why do it? All right, folks, it's been very real. We will return on Saturday, Captain, with the great Daryl B., talking about something else we don't eventually do, comic books, sci-fi, fantasy, and then we'll have AfroNerd Radio at 7 p.m. on Saturday. But it starts at 6 p.m. with the comic shop. All right, going out, this is Mayor Hawthorne, Maybe So, Maybe No. See you on Saturday.